Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories, discussions, and debates from the front page of Hacker News. I am your host, Sarah.
And I am Mike. It is great to be here with you all today.
Today is Tuesday, June 16th, 2026, and this is episode number 428. As always, we are looking back at the most interesting trends and conversations from yesterday, Monday, June 15th. We have a really fantastic lineup for you today.
We really do. We are going to be talking about a major 1.0 release for a fascinating networking library called Iroh. Then, a wild story about a highly targeted backdoor hidden inside a LinkedIn job offer. We will also discuss why the maintainer of Curl is taking a month-long break from security reports, dive into a cultural critique about what exactly happened to the charming nerds of Silicon Valley, and finally, we will wrap up with a fun pixel art pirate sailing game called Tiny Wind.
Let us kick things off with our top story from yesterday, which pulled in over 1,000 points. It is the 1.0 release of Iroh. The tagline here is, dial keys, not IPs. Iroh is essentially a peer-to-peer networking library that abstracts away the nightmare of IP addresses, NAT traversal, and firewalls. Instead of connecting to an IP address, which can change or be hidden behind a router, you connect to a cryptographic key.
Right, and they've been building this in the open for about 4 years, over 65 releases. They're already seeing massive adoption, with something like 200 million endpoints created on their public relays just in the last 30 days. People are using it for video streaming, local-first apps, and syncing data for AI models. But if you're sitting there wondering how this is different from something like Tailscale, which we all know and love, there was a fantastic comment from a user named A. Pittman that really clarified the mental model.
I saw that comment. It was so good. A. Pittman described Iroh as Tailscale at the application layer instead of the network layer.
Exactly. If you're an app developer and you want instances of your app to talk to each other directly, you could theoretically bundle Tailscale, but then your users need Tailscale accounts and your app is dependent on their ecosystem. Iroh lets you embed that secure peer-to-peer networking directly into your own binary. It's just one library. You compile it, and suddenly your app can securely dial any other instance of your app anywhere in the world, using public relays as a fallback if direct connection fails.
Another user, Michael Salim, chimed in to say this is a total game changer for environments where you want users to access local instances, like controlling smart home software from a phone without needing to be on the same local Wi-Fi network. And with this 1.0 release, they are asserting wire stability and offering official support for Python, Node, Swift, and Kotlin alongside REST. It really feels like they are handing developers a superpower.
It definitely does. And I love that they added support for custom transports. One of the core devs jumped into the comments to mention that people are already building experimental transports for Bluetooth Low Energy and Tor. It is just a really elegant piece of technology that fits perfectly into the broader trend we are seeing of local-first software and decentralizing the web away from massive cloud providers.
Speaking of things developers need to watch out for, our next story is a stark reminder of how sophisticated social engineering has become. A developer named Roman Emankulov shared a post titled, "A Backdoor in a LinkedIn Job Offer."
This story is wild, Sarah. It reads like a spy thriller.
It really does. Roman was contacted on LinkedIn by a recruiter for a small crypto startup. After chatting for a bit, she asked him to review a public GitHub repo for a broken proof of concept they needed a lead engineer for. Specifically, she asked him to check out a deprecated Node modules issue. Now, Roman got a bad feeling about this. Instead of just cloning it to his local machine, he spun up a throwaway cloud server and pointed an AI agent at the code in read-only mode.
And thank goodness he did. The AI immediately flagged a file disguised as a test suite. Hidden between walls of commented out code was a payload that essentially assembled a URL, reached out to a server, and executed whatever that server sent back. But the really clever part was how it was triggered. The package.json file was wired so that just running npm install would automatically execute the backdoor via the prepare script. The whole deprecated module story was just bait to get him to run npm install.
It is terrifying, and the rabbit hole goes deeper. Roman looked into the GitHub commit history. There were 39 commits under the name and email of a real, legitimate full-stack engineer. Roman actually reached out to this guy, and the guy had no idea. He was being completely impersonated. Then Roman looked closer at the recruiter profile. It turned out to be a stolen identity of a real arts journalist. When Roman played dumb and told the recruiter he was having trouble installing the project, this supposed non-technical recruiter suddenly became an expert on Node versions and kept pushing him to run the install command.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly insightful, especially regarding LinkedIn's role in this. A user named Pants2 pointed out a massive flaw in LinkedIn's platform. Currently, companies have no easy way to disavow users who claim to work for them. If a scammer creates a profile and says they are a recruiter at your startup, they will show up on your official company page. Several founders in the thread mentioned they have had to deal with fake recruiters scamming people under their company name, and LinkedIn support does almost nothing about it unless you happen to personally know someone who works there.
That is such a glaring security hole for a professional network. It really highlights a broader trend we are seeing with supply chain attacks and highly targeted phishing. The bad actors know that developers are wise to email attachments now, so they are exploiting the inherent trust we place in open source repositories, package managers, and professional networking sites. It is a good reminder that if a random recruiter sends you a repo, maybe do not run npm install on your main machine.
Absolutely. Moving on to our third story, we have an announcement from Daniel Stenberg, the creator and lead developer of Curl. The post is titled, "Curl will not accept vulnerability reports during July 2026.
I love this so much. Daniel is calling it the Curl Summer of Bliss. For the entire month of July, the Curl project is pausing its HackerOne submission form and turning its security email address into a dead end. They will not process or look at any vulnerability reports until August. Daniel writes that they have been under huge pressure for the last 4 months, with an absolute deluge of reports, and the maintainers just need to rest, breathe, and maybe write some fun code instead of constantly triaging CVEs.
It is such a healthy boundary to set. Curl is arguably one of the most critical pieces of software on the planet. It runs in cars, televisions, routers, and almost every server on Earth. The burden on these maintainers is immense. But there's also a really interesting business angle here that the Hacker News community picked up on immediately.
Right. User Vesenes pointed out that the headline kind of buries the lead. In the post, Daniel mentions that anyone with a paid support contract will, of course, still get full and appropriate service during this period. So, as Vesenes noted, this is not just a well-deserved vacation, it is a brilliant way to encourage enterprise support contracts.
Exactly. It forces the issue. If you are a massive corporation making billions of dollars relying on Curl and you demand 24/7 security patching, you need to pay for it. Otherwise, you can wait until August like everyone else. It sparked a huge debate in the comments about the unpaid labor of open source. Some people joked about a race to the bottom or developers do free work forever, but others pointed out that this is exactly how open source should work. The code is free, but the immediate on-demand human labor is not.
It makes perfect sense. If there's a massive heartbleed-level vulnerability, the community will patch it or fork it temporarily. But for the endless stream of minor bugs, often generated by automated tools and AI scanners these days, the maintainers deserve a break. I hope more open source projects adopt the Summer of Bliss model.
I completely agree. Our next story shifts gears into a broader cultural discussion. It's a blog post from Mr. Market titled, "What Happened to Nerds?" It really resonated with the Hacker News crowd, pulling in over 700 points.
This was a deeply nostalgic and slightly frustrated piece. The author talks about how 10 or 15 years ago, the cultural archetype of a tech founder was someone like Steve Wozniak or even Steve Jobs. They were seen as obsessive, maybe a bit eccentric, but fundamentally driven by a love for the technology. They were nerds who made money almost as a byproduct of wanting to build cool things, and they largely wanted to be left alone to do their work.
Yeah, and the author argues that over the last decade, that archetype has morphed into something entirely different. Tech leadership has realized that the trust they built up over 40 years can be liquidated and traded for attention. We have moved from the founder as a mysterious builder to the founder as a reality star or an attention-hungry oligarch.
The piece specifically calls out a recent video produced by Founders Fund, Peter Thiel's VC firm, where a bunch of high-profile tech founders and CEOs play a party game about deception. The author asks, why on earth would you do this? Why take these people who are supposed to be building our future and present them as slick, media-obsessed game show contestants?
The comments on Hacker News were gnawing along vigorously. There is a real sense of fatigue with the grifter era of Silicon Valley. People miss the days when tech was about solving hard engineering problems rather than optimizing for engagement on social media or launching a podcast to build a personal brand. It ties back to the financialization of tech. when the goal shifts from building a sustainable product to securing the next massive round of funding, the founders have to become hype men.
It is sad, but I do think there is a pendulum swing happening. You see it in the popularity of local-first software, indie hacking, and smaller utility-focused tools. There is a hunger for the old, boring, trustworthy nerd ethos to come back. People want to root for the Wozniaks of the world again.
That is a great transition to our final story, which is the exact opposite of the slick VC hype machine. It is a show HN post for a game called Tiny Wind.
Yes, Tiny Wind is a free, browser-based pixel pirate sailing game. The creator posted that players have already sailed over 380,000 kilometers in the game. It is super charming. You control a little pixelated ship, manage your sails, and battle other ships while navigating wind currents.
It is incredibly cute, but of course, this being Hacker News, the discussion immediately zeroed in on the phrase real wind physics in the title. A user named Torlock pointed out that the mechanics of sailing upwind, downwind, and the cost of tacking are not really simulated accurately. They noted that a square-rigged ship in the game sails upwind like it has a motor, which physically makes no sense.
I had to laugh at that. It is peak Hacker News to critique the aerodynamic accuracy of a 2D pixel art pirate game. But to the developers' credit, they were super responsive in the thread. They admitted the simulation is simple right now, mostly just aligning sails for speed, and they are taking all the feedback in stride.
Another player mentions the difficulty curve is a bit brutal. Apparently, enemies have perfect aim, and you can only heal your ship if you manage to capture an island, which is hard to do when you are getting peppered with cannonballs. But overall, people really loved the vibe. It reminds me of those classic Flash games we used to play. It's just a single developer building something fun and putting it out into the world for free.
Exactly. It is a perfect palate cleanser after talking about backdoors and tech oligarchs. If you have a few minutes today, definitely go check out Tiny Wind in your browser. It's surprisingly relaxing, even if the wind physics are not perfectly historically accurate.
Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 428 of HN Pod.
If you want to dive deeper into any of the stories or read the comment threads we mentioned, you can find all the links in our show notes. We'll be back tomorrow to cover the best of Tuesday's Hacker News. Until then, keep building, stay curious, and maybe double check before you run NPM install.
Have a great day, everyone.